just between you and him. Srila Prabhupada, wherever you went, there was a deity of Krishna, and you worshipped there. But you carried the picture of Radha Rasa Vihari, and once you even prayed to Lord Krishna in London to please engage you in the service of Rasa Vihari. You were protecting him, and he was patiently, valiantly waiting during the fight for possession. Just between you and him, you had invited him to stay, and you could not tolerate that anyone should force him away. Appearing white and delicate, with a long silver flute, his right wrist resting on a herdsman's rest stick, with a garland of roses and marigolds, like the one you also wore, to the temple, he drew them for his darshan. To his left you sat erect, facing the group, to whom you strongly lectured on the teachings of Lord Kapila. After philosophy, whatever halava and fruits had been offered to their lordships, you distributed from your hand, grasping the prasadam between your fingers and thumb. Everyone received at least a small palmful from the inexhaustible plate of your Rasa Vihari. Giriraj. At first he winced as you handed over so much responsibility, but he did not falter. "If you think," you said, "that this is Krishna's project, so let Krishna worry about it, that is not very good." His initial idea was to follow Raghunath Das Goswami, austere in study and regulative bhajan. But you reminded, "Raghunath handled his father's estate like a first-class businessman, and then he became a Goswami." "They have come to me for bhajan," you thought, "and if I ask them to do business, they will not like it." And you told the story of a mother who watched her little son do his 1 + 1 = 2. When the son grew up, he studied higher math, but all his mother noticed were the same numbers 1 and 2. She did not know the gulf of difference between the child's and the man's use of 1 and 2. "If my students," you said, "could realize this point, they could do much more." Giriraj realized more, simply that whatever you said, he would do. He went out on your order, approaching friends and demons, seeing everything as your divine grace. He simply served, satisfied to be your chela. And so you made him into a fighter and were satisfied with him. The fight for permission to build. One battle won, another followed. You owned the land, but could not build. The police commission said they would grant permission as soon as the city agreed, and the city said they were waiting to hear from the police. Devotees went from one to the other, sometimes held 3 hours in a waiting room before being given another non-conclusion. Half a year went by, but still you could not build. Then finally, a message from the office of police. "You cannot build because this bhajan is a nuisance." To reverse this insult to Lord Chaitanya's kirtan, you sent your men into the city. As late as they returned, you would stay up waiting. Their austerity was but a glimmer of your concern. This reminds us of your account of Shah Jahan. A man asked the author of that play why the title was Shah Jahan, since all the action is about the son, Aurangzeb, while Shah Jahan is in prison. The author replied, "Shah Jahan is the hero because all the events were beating his heart." You were serving and struggling at Hare Krishna land, and your devotees were trying to help you. Your pure consciousness keenly felt the insult and you planned the counterattack. Lord Krishna had stated, "My devotee always chants." And Lord Chaitanya had ordered, "Kirtaniya Sada Hari." But the government was atheist, discouraging religion as a waste of time. They had not complained to the Chand movie house, which caused a nightly traffic jam and noisy milling crowds. Taking the situation as a chance to preach, you glorified the Lord and condemned the vicious times that claimed kirtan a nuisance. You suspended all travel and stayed 3 months to fight, but every evening you would lecture, completely transcendental. From the Vyasasan one night you saw Giriraj and Bhagavan returning, fatigued and unwashed. When they did not dance, you included in your lecture, "We must always dance in kirtan, even if the police commissioner doesn't give us permission." When you informed the police of hundreds of people who would march and thousands of names in petition in favor of the temple and the Hindu religion, they gave a partial permit for the hotel towers, but not for the temple. But the municipality canceled even that. And when you asked to see the governor, there was no reply. By Lord Krishna's will, a new chief minister took office who was favorable to kirtan. For both the temple and hotel, permission soon was granted. Now you could begin. The struggle to build. One day during lunchtime, you called for Giriraj. You could not eat due to anxiety. You were very doubtful whether your men could manage such a great construction. They were being cheated, and the quality of work was poor. You said, "Spiritual life is supposed to be eternal bliss, but it is becoming eternal anxiety." You had to travel, but even from Africa you could see more than your disciples in Bombay. They were unaware that an engineer and guard were stealing supplies from Hare Krishna land. Again, in Nairobi, you could not eat. "How? When my money is being stolen?" Returning to Bombay, you hired the nation's best construction firm. Now it would get done with money coming from devotees in America by selling your books. Fighting with the Mayavadis. Every night you fought in your powerful lectures, and every minute you were fighting them. You are so kindly delivering the message of Lord Chaitanya and delivering these Western worlds which are filled with voidism and impersonalism. India is especially a hodgepodge. They misuse the Bhagavad Gita and worship many gods in ignorance. No guru ever showed them Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. But whoever came to you, so many kinds of Mayavadis, had their illusions removed. On the morning walks, your friend Dr. Patel received your mercy as you argued against his stubborn, proud Hinduism. He and his doctor and lawyer friends would join you on the beach, and we came to dread their disrespectful debates. One time it came to a crisis. You were chastising bogus teachers to whom these men were sentimentally attached. You detected impersonalism even in their beloved Swami Narayan and other well-known saints of India. It became a shouting match. "Then we don't accept you!" We could barely restrain ourselves, but you roared back at them and then laughed and went on walking. You considered them foolish. You, their friendly elder brother. Still, it was too much. You also decided, "We cannot speak with them. We will walk on the beach reading Krishna book aloud, and if they like, they can join, but no more talk." For a while, they avoided you, walking at a distance. But that was artificial. They returned like puppy dogs, and it continued every morning, your drubbing the thick head of the Hindu doctor who claimed he was your brother in a previous life. In this give-and-take manner, you are teaching everyone, Krishna is the Param Brahman, and those who deny it should be captured at the throat as a policeman grabs a thief. Memories. Nice weather and the palm tree breezes you always liked. Even when there was litigation or anxiety, to take an outdoor massage with palm drops of mustard oil applied by one of your men. Of the aged body you said, the windows are broken, but there is a light inside. You were always jolly, as a saint should be. So many aspects to you. This is one. You sat on a thin mat, your body moving languorously back and forth in the sunlight, under the hands of the rugged rubdown, at the same time talking Bombay business with a trusted devotee. Your talk would always turn to Krishna as you examined a thing in its Krishna-conscious light. Sitting for massage, your whole spiritual body was golden and smooth. Eyes half closed, smiling, amidst tropic breezes and mustard oil aroma, you confided, I am not anxious about going back to Godhead. I just want to expose these rascals. Taking rest around 10 p.m., or if talking to a lawyer, 11, lying down on your bed under the white mosquito netting, you rose of your own will around 1 a.m., walking into your other room. The mosquitoes were so bloodthirsty, we had another mosquito tent at your desk. You entered and sat with the microphone and books to deliver your ecstatic purports. You didn't like the dog packs howling outside the window, but even though we would chase them, they would return, always yapping. After 2 hours of recorded Bhagavatam, you began chanting japa. I used to sleep on the porch under a mosquito net, and at 3 a.m. I would rise. Then I would have to pass through your room. Once you engaged me in some conversation from inside your net. You asked for a certain English word meaning chains. I suggested shackles, since you use that word often. And you replied, yes. To me, that was as delightful and satisfying as Lord Kapila's teachings, an intimate, friendly gift from you. But one morning, I forgot to put ginger on your breakfast plate. You were angry, and when you saw me take it lightly, you broke me into pieces by your use of sarcasm. Suddenly I beheld my lack of surrender chasm at my feet, and still today I call to you to save me. Juhu Beach. Just by seeing these palm trees, one makes spiritual benefit. And you also said, to become purified, I go to three places in the world, Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Juhu Beach. But it is you who are the true purifier of Juhu Beach, or even of Vrindavan. Now the Bombayites are still walking there. The old man calls out, Jai Ramji, to passing joggers. The coconut wallahs are there, the dogs, hogs, and ponies, old men in white clothes with walking sticks. But who will explain to the people the actual meaning of Rama and Krishna? Only you. Your followers can do it, but people will only listen if they believe we are your sons. When you walked the beach, it wasn't just a deep purple sky, lightening to blue with white clouds. It was Bhagavatam realization at every step. Either silent or talking, with your cane marking the sand, you were the undisputed chairman of Bhagavat philosophy. And with the light of the Bhagavat, you illumined every darkened subject. The sun coming up Delhi over the Arabian Sea doesn't mean automatically we can become Krishna conscious. And even if the big Air India jets leave on time, lifting over the ocean, that doesn't mean mankind is progressing. You have to be there, Prabhupada. You have to be there. As we come back from our beach walk, now see the white marble domes and the formidable twin towers of the ISKCON Ashram Hotel. We are trying to keep you in our hearts. Your potential work is not completed. The fights are furiously continuing. Rasa Bihari's rights are still contested. Again, we are in the courts. But you have left a legacy in Bombay. Don't be afraid. Remember me and fight. By your preaching, you have gained the loyal support of important men. And your own devotees, trained by you, know how to continue, how to fight, how to depend on you. Proofs and conclusions. I can give shastric proofs of your exalted state, as Krishna Das Kaviraj gave on behalf of Lord Chaitanya. The Dharma for this Etanam Sankirtan, but unless one is empowered by Krishna, he cannot spread the holy name. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 7:11. Or take any shastra that proclaims the devotee is even dearer than Krishna, like Lord Shiva's statement to Parvati, Tvadiyanam Samarchanam Padma Purana. Vishnu worship is the highest, and higher than that is worship of the devotee of Vishnu. Or take Lord Vishnu's own statement, Saints are my heart, Bhagavatam 9.4.68. To prove you are the most saintly pure devotee, described in all the Vedas, one who behaves and preaches well, one who knows the conclusion of all knowledge, and who can convince others of this knowledge, who is peaceful, self-controlled, a friend to all, completely attached to Krishna, who enacts great desires on behalf of the Lord for spreading his glories, these things are not difficult to prove among your opulences. In Hare Krishna land, you showed them also. You tolerated the demons' delays, but since you were merciful, did not leave. In your nightly lectures in the temporary temple, you always strictly kept the parampara, surrender to Krishna. Through all the struggles, you led the devotees by perfect precept and action, and by doing so, you created a broad following of many families in Bombay. Those persons whose homes you went to took up chanting and worship of the deity, and still they come to Hare Krishna land. Others whose lives you touched, only in passing, or so it seemed, have since grown up like late blooming creepers from the original seed you planted. They come to the temple, 1,000 each day, 20,000 on Sunday, to take the darshan of Rasa Bihari and to accept their prasadam. Mainly it is the deity who draws them, and in the course of their visit they will also hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. We who are seeking you by service in separation can see you in this preaching. It is you who brought the deity and brought them to see the deity. It is you who have named and built Hare Krishna land. When we preach in Bombay, everyone remembers you. Those who saw or heard you become life members because of you. The unrealized potential of Hare Krishna land is your presence, driving us to maintain what you gave and to expand it for your pleasure.
Jaya Radha Madhava Punya Vihari
Jaya Radha Madhava Punya Vihari
Jaya Radha Madhava गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
गोपी जन वल्लभ
गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर
Vrindavan. History. You came to us from Vrindavan and brought Vrindavan with you. As a child, you would think of going to Vrindavan, studying the train tables, how to raise the fare. In Radha Govinda Mandir, you saw Vrindavan worship. At 5 years old, you wanted your own. Your childhood Ratha Yatra is also connected by an intimate meaning to Vrindavan. In your household life, you traveled to Vrindavan, and you named your son Vrindavan. And when you met your Guru Maharaj, then you were Koshi on the border of Vrindavan, and heard from him the pure consummation of all your youthful yearnings for entering Vrindavan. And it was in Vrindavan, at Radhakund, that you heard from him, whom you held as the expert knower of Vrindavan. His desire for printing books, Vrindavan, you learned, should not be kept hidden. The message of Vrindavan Chandra, Vrindavan Aishwari, and their eternal abode should be widely given as nectar and as sumptuous food to the parched and starving souls of Kali Yuga. On his order, you preached in India's cities during World War II and the struggle for Swaraj, but you also sought the shelter of Vrindavan. On the banks of the Jamuna you resided, simple, pure days and nights, writing your essays, but also leaving Keshi Ghat and going to deliver back to Godhead to materialistic men and women in New Delhi. You took sannyas, and at Radha Damodar you began the Srimad Bhagavatam. Reside and write in Vrindavan, collect and print in Delhi. 3 volumes you published that way. In Vrindavan, ISKCON was created from the desires of the Acharyas and from your personal will to deliver Krishna to the West. But so much were you attached to Vrindavan's dust that when you journeyed on the Jaladuta, you thought yourself the son and messenger of Vraja. I am feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my lords, Sri Govinda Gopinath Radha Damodar. And in Manhattan's winter, you declared, my heart is always hankering after that Vrindavan. In 1967, when you became very ill, you desired to return, to recuperate or to pass away. I am feeling too much to return to Vrindavan, to the lotus feet of Vrindavan Bihari. Your disciples were anxious. What if Krishna keeps Swamiji in Vrindavan? What if he never returns? It sounded to them like you were transferring directly to the spiritual abode where once going one never returns to this world. You encouraged them, when you see Vrindavan, you will not be able to understand how I could have left that place to come here. It is so nice. There, everyone is always chanting Hare Krishna, and there are thousands of temples. But as soon as you arrived, you were planning your return. Your life of pure service must be shared. Vrindavan was inspiration, the ideal training ground. Here the neophyte disciples would find austerity and culture. 2 days here were more valuable than a year in the West. In 1970, in triumph with 40 disciples, the fruit of vigorous, empowered preaching, the hometown Swamiji returned to Vrindavan. At an official reception, the Rijabasis praised you. It was all very pleasing. but you had come for land. With 40 men and women, you went to Govardhan, which they knew about from your books on Parikram. And they saw delight in your eyes and heard your ecstatic, smiling laughter. But mostly, very gravely, you went, as if you were thinking of the Tirtha in a way you did not express, sometimes speaking but not obliged, like a professional performer who is obliged to speak to earn his keep or to please a crowd. You went to the Kshuma Sarovara, where Radha and Krishna enjoyed. At Barshana, the devotees carried you on a palanquin up the stairs. While at the home of Radharani, you said little, because what could we understand? Only, just over there, Krishna used to come down that hill. Radha would come down this hill, and they would meet in the middle. There was a forest there, so this is a very special place. You had revealed you wanted a center in Vrindavan, and that was the main thing. How it would come about was yet unclear. As your disciples could not realize fully Krishna's lilas, so they also could not grasp your order. Who among them would be ready to live and work all year through the harsh Vrindavan climate, battling with bureaucrats and working to construct a temple? Maybe that is why you were silent on Parikram, wondering who among these sightseeing children would endure and create a temple in the Dham. You had defended your followers with Shastric references, that they should be accepted as Brahmins, sannyasis, and pujaris. Your followers were bona fide bhaktas. You were very strong, arguing these points with the caste Goswamis. But when it came to substantial work, who among them would stay and manage a construction site? And from where would the money come? As yet, you had only a promise of Ramanreti land. Patiently, you depended on Krishna and continued on Parikram, dunking and splashing in the river Yamuna, your men shouting in glee, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. In March 1972, you returned to finalize the deed. Radharani had said yes, convincing Mr. and Mrs. S. Give the Ramanreti land to Bhakti Swami. Another aspect of your vision. You would revive the spiritual life as it was when the six Goswamis wrote in Vrindavan, discovered the Tirthas, and built the major temples. Externally, Vrindavan was degraded. A respectable man may say, why do you want to make a center there? It is dirty and full of thieves, full of Mayavadis also, and Sahajiyas, who talk only of rasa dance, biddy-smoking sadhus chasing after women. But Vrindavan is always Krishna's place, so you would serve the Dham with reform, with pure and youthful bhakti, a new temple, as service to Rupa and Jiva. The first steps were the same as in Bombay and Mayapur. Get the land, get the deed, and with festive ceremony, place Ananta in the pit. But in the dead of night, hired hoodlums desecrated the ground and stole the ISKCON placard as if to nullify your claim. You were angry, but never thwarted. This is a sign, you said. We should move here at once, fence and protect the land, and start to build without delay. In October 1972, for the season of Kartik, you returned to read and speak from the nectar of devotion. You resided in your Radha Damodar rooms and spoke by the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. A few dozen devotees from around the world were eager to hear you. You wore your chadar and held kirtan in the evenings outdoors, your face and singing strong, reminiscent of your kirtans in Golden Gate Park. Here was a rare treat, Kartik with you in Vrindavan. The steps in bhakti, the right of the lowborn to take to bhakti, the worldwide bhakti mission. You spoke spontaneously on these themes at a rapid pace, life-giving instructions to make a follower strong. We are all followers of Rupa Goswami, and by reading his book, we are worshipping him. Only because you said so did we know it was true. The Rupanugas from abroad were gaining access to the nectar only by your grace. As in your early preaching days in New York, you were free and open, especially after lectures, when you met with your disciples in your room of eternal residence. But there was a price. You requested each devotee render some service, whatever they could do. As the servant of Lord Krishna, you also offered, as they surrender unto me, so I reciprocate with them. To serve you in India was more intimate and personal. You were often there, taking close personal care of the projects and the men. But the test was more severe. During this Kartik stay, Subal, the boy you charged to begin construction on your land, came before you with a heavy heart. "I don't have time to read. I can't chant." He said he was distracted with too much worry, cement and money and cheating builders, and so he could not think of Krishna. Your response was strong. Thinking of the checkbook was like Arjuna's thinking. "This is Krishna's service," you said. "Don't pursue an inactive trance in the name of Krishna bhakti. Don't seek to chant in seclusion, but fight on his behalf, rendering service to your guru in his cause to stop the demons from destroying the world." Only active service could control the mind and senses, while secluded meditation would end in sleep and sex. Active service was the topmost yoga. And what was Prabhupada's desire? That was clear. Build a temple in Vrindavan. They had held the land a year, but still no building. Subal said he couldn't do it. So to get things going, you went yourself, and with your hand, you applied the first cement for the temple's foundation. Thus, Kartik with you was a lesson in devotion. 1973. "Why so much delay?" you asked. "Just pick a competent engineer and design a temple with some of the features of Govinda Mandir. Worship the two brothers, Krishna Balaram, right in Ramanreti, in the sands of their play, where even today cuckoos, parrots, and peacocks fill the forest with an atmosphere of songs. Their confidential pastimes will become an open secret. That is their desire. Let people come and see, in a gorgeous temple, the supreme person, Krishna, and his brother Balaram. Vrajendra Nandana Yei, Sachi Suta Haila Sai, Balarama Haila Nitai. Balaram and the son of Nanda Maharaj have invented themselves as Gaur Nitai. Let people come and learn these open secrets." "But get it going." Gurudas, now your man in charge, gave an optimistic promise. The temple would be opened by Janmashtami, 1973. But real obstacles, the cash flow, the unwieldy workers, the tortuous heat, and the incredible saga of obtaining steel and cement made it impossible to open on time. "All right," you said. "Just make my room ready so I can come and push. But next year, by Janmashtami 74, you must definitely open." A sudden shock. Mr. S. telegrammed, "To reclaim the front 50 feet. How could it be? Again, you stressed, "You should have built by now. Then this could not have happened." But still, S. had no claim. The land had been given in the name of Radharani. You handled threat like the ones in Bombay, telling S. the history of Nriga Maharaj, who had been accused of taking back from a gift of thousands one single cow, and for that act against the Brahmins, King Nriga had to suffer. Mr. S. withdrew, and you sped ahead to build a 12-foot wall encircling all the land. Then you had to travel, but promised to return for the grand Janmashtami opening. Again they failed to open at the designated date. You arrived in Vrindavan to half-finished walls and piles of sand, still a construction site. "There is nothing here. Where is the temple?" In transcendental anger, you criticized your men for creating a fiasco. "Then when will it be ready?" You considered the shortage of cement and the work yet to be done and decided on Ram Nomani in April 1975. They would not disappoint you again. But while in Vrindavan on your 80th birthday in 1974, you grew very ill. Now, as I recount the dates and events, I see I cannot touch your transcendental greatness. I may write, "You grew ill, but how to understand your words? that your illness was due to the misdeeds of your disciples. By not following the rules, by not chanting 16 rounds, and by failing to rise early, they were causing you to suffer the external symptoms of severe malaria. In the monsoon season's humid heat, you lay without appetite, your fever rising to 104. No doctor can cure me. Your condition worsened, and you accepted the proposal that all around the world your disciples hold kirtan 24 hours a day. Yes, this kirtan is what actually gives us life. Devotees prayed for your recovery, and those who heard your heavy statements of why you were lying ill prayed to never misbehave and cause you pain. This was the reality of Sri Jiva's injunction not to take too many disciples. You had known such things would happen when you had first left Vrindavan to come west. Other sadhus stayed behind out of fear of this reaction for the mercy of uplifting fallen souls. It was the will of Krishna to your further glory and to warn disciples of the gravity of their personal bond with you. You took the risk again and again. What can be done? Out of compassion, you were ever willing, facing pain and death to save us. Here I speak of pain and death, and so fail to understand. The liberated soul, for you, there was no pain or death, not like an ordinary man's. And yet we saw you undertake many risks and dangers of this world. Although we cannot see you as material, yet we cannot take you lightly. We will not understand if we judge in meager terms of our own experience, but through the eyes of Shastra and through the eyes of love, we know you endured many risks and pains just to save us from the ordeal of illusion of repeated births and deaths. You had come for a celebration, but now your servants carried you. Your followers were supplicating Krishna, and you were lying down amidst continuous kirtan, depending on Krishna. Suddenly, the governor of Uttar Pradesh was coming for a visit to the temple. He can come, your disciples said, but Prabhupada cannot see him. The fever, almost a delirium, still you ordered, and four men carried you in a chair into the courtyard. With dozens of policemen, cars, and militia, the Muslim potentate arrived to find you, greeting, smiling, standing, lecturing, and requesting that he please help you obtain cement. Finally, after accepting prasad, he departed, and your temperature rose to 105. We do not like to speculate, but take your every act as divine instruction. Half a dozen devotees were also ill, but with your example leading the way, everyone was laboring to build Krishna's temple. Gradually your fever broke, and you returned to duties. Two tapes daily of Chaitanya Charitamrita, then off to Bombay and a worldwide tour, 12 cities and 34,000 miles in 50 days. You would return for the grand Vrindavan opening. In Vrindavan, you wrote, we are attempting to build a temple for our disciples throughout the world. Lord Chaitanya also wished his disciples to visit the Dham, and he asked Rupa and Sanatan to live there and receive them. Some of the greatest Vaishnavas, Ramananda Roy, Haridas Thakur, Srivas, and Gadadhar, always saw Vrindavan in their minds, although they never traveled there. Your own devotees, although living in the West, in mundane cities like Paris and L.A., were also always in Vrindavan by living in the temples. But by your mercy now, all could journey to Vrindavan, to a place so wonderful, even the neophyte would be inspired to understand the real Vrindavan. To understand the real Vrindavan. At least you gave us the chance. And now the work was done. On Ram Nomani, 1975, your heart was thrilled when you reached Raman Reti and beheld the Mandir domes, monuments of victory, rising in grace and strength, proclaiming, here is the temple of Krishna and Balaram. Stay here and worship the brothers. Rama and Krishna are Gornitai. And you led a procession, blazing torches, shanai music, elephants, 600 devotees, to the center of the crowded town, inviting Vrijabhasis to the next day's opening. Your room was crowded, and every moment you were busy. You even put your writing aside and received special guests, heard reports on the thousands of installation details, and met with your leaders, hearing their urgent news of preaching in dozens of needy countries. None of this seemed a burden on you, but was constant, ecstatic samadhi. You stressed the real celebration was of kirtan, prasadam distribution, and the great chance to preach. More than the rituals of the Brahmins, it was the Hare Krishna kirtan that would inaugurate the worship. Do it for 24 hours each day. The opulent, transcendental forms of the 10 deities were bathed and dressed after 3 days of mantras and preparations, and finally you were asked to perform the opening arti. You were also transcendentally dressed in shiny saffron silk and decorated also with the natural glories of pure love of Krishna as you entered the deity room. Conch shells blasted, the large doors opened, and thousands of roaring devotees cheered your presence before the Lord. It was no routine arti. The ecstatic mood increased as you held each article in your upraised hand, and as you turned after offering to the Lord and offered each holy article before the crowd, the devotees all cheered, congratulating you with shouts of appreciation for what you were doing, giving the breath of life, giving the gift of darshan in open audience with the Lord. The newly elected governor, surrounded by his guard of 50 drab tan soldiers, was also swept along in the rushing waves, the sights and sounds of spiritual bliss. Krishna and Balaram, beautiful, black and white, stood under a canopy, Balaram's left hand resting on his gnarled cowherd's rod as he leaned on his strong younger brother, who held his jolly flute before his mouth. Both brothers, covered with fragrant garlands of roses, allowed us to worship their visible lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada, you offered each article so nicely, holding up the flaming ghee lamps, sprinkling the water on our heads. Pure bhakti was flowing from you to us and from us to you, and spilling over to onlookers who also joined by the force of the event. As you turned and waved the chamra to the crowd, your smile, coming straight from your worship of the Raman Reti lords, showed you were in the real Vrindavan. You couldn't hide it. You were in Vrindavan with Krishna Balaram, and we could also see. By the time you offered the peacock fan, the crowd was tumultuous. Then, quieting the audience, you spoke, even while standing in the intimacy of their altar. "This is an international temple," you said. "Everyone can come and worship here. It is not restricted by sectarian views. Everyone should come and chant Hare Krishna." After that, as you requested, continuous kirtans tested the strongest singers and dancers, while prasadam was served to the thousands of guests. The Krishna Balaram Mandir, an international guest house, was now an operating life, never to cease in its service. And I can imagine the deep satisfaction felt by you and those who served you dearly through years of striving to bring this about. But I can remember the following morning you went out to walk and informed us all of our special relation to Krishna Balaram. "Balaram," you said, "is the source of spiritual strength, and we should pray to him in our weakness. Devotees should come to Vrindavan," you advised, "and renew their strength. Balaram and Krishna will protect the Krishna conscious movement and its many bold preachers. The devotee can renew his strength and then go back to fight the demons in the attempt to save the innocent of this world." You in Vrindavan. It is a special influence if you stay here without Vishayi. You will see the real Vrindavan. This is also a special influence of you in Vrindavan. More than anywhere in the world, it is your home. From before your coming to the West up until your final Leela, Vrindavan was inspiration for your outgoing mission. Like Lord Krishna, you are a person, and like him, you make this your home.